This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeline Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, Clash of the Titans, superheroes versus superheroes. And before we get on with our episode, just to say we're celebrating our 1,000th download. So thank you everybody who's supporting us, and you know, please keep it up because our next target is 2,000. And we will be announcing the winner of the guest spot and subject sometime in the future, probably on our Facebook page, but it will filter out to the other pages as well.
Now, we're very delighted to welcome back onto the show today Ben Berman-Gam, who previously featured on our episode Teams, Trios and Fellowships, The Importance of Friendship in Speculative Fiction. Welcome back, Ben.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you back, Ben.
So basically, yeah. We decided we were going to talk about superheroes, and you seemed the most obvious guest to...
Yes, it's all I'm qualified for in this life.
Well, after our long tangent on Daredevil...
Yes. But I can do the others too.
I'm putting you up now. Daredevil might come up, but we're going to start off with the three films which are big so far at the moment, which is DC's Dawn of Justice, which if you haven't seen it has got Superman versus Batman in, the X-Men Apocalypse film, and Civil War, which is basically an Avengers film but seems to be marketed under Captain America.
It's Avengers, but they didn't invite Thor because that stuff would have been sorted really quickly otherwise.
Yeah,
he just arrives like, nah. Yeah, so.
Yeah. So we're looking at those, and we're also looking at the trend really of what is it and why are these films together as well? So many superheroes against superheroes. What is it about that dynamic that's interesting? Because, okay, yes, you do have a villain in Apocalypse, but really he's quite sidelined by the fact that got X-Men fighting X-Men. So that's where we're going.
We've weirdly as a society really always, it seems to be a tradition that the first time superheroes meet, they have to punch each other in the face first. we like the concept of them fighting, and I think part of that comes from oftentimes our heroes are more dynamic characters than our villains. So, you know, pitting them against each other can be two interesting characters as opposed to one interesting character and the bad guy. And I think that's part of it. But I also think there's a very childish who would win quality. And I think that shows through in some of these stories more than others.
Yeah. And I think that there's another element to it as well, because as far as I'm concerned, there's two kinds of heroes versus heroes that you can get. Now, as you said, Ben, in a lot of them, when superheroes first meet... they end up in a punch-up quite often.
Think about the first Avengers movie even, or just any comic book.
Exactly, they do. They often end up in a punch-up the first time they meet. And that's normally quite a sort of an interesting way for these characters to be introduced to each other, to say, look, these two people are larger than life, and, you know, they have to learn to work together, basically. And so that's an interesting thing. But I think at the moment there's this trend going on, which is that they've taken groups who are friends...
And they
break them up and then they make them fight. And I take issue with that personally, because I think they purposefully do it to wound us, to hurt us. And I struggle with it. I struggled with of the three films that we're talking about today. I've only actually seen one of them, so this will be good. But it was Civil War, and I struggled with Civil War because I'm one of the very few Tony Stark supporters.
No, hang on. You're not entirely alone there.
I know I'm not alone, but it's just everywhere I turn, everyone's like, oh yeah, Bucky, and I'm like, well, I don't know, I kind of feel like Bucky should have probably handed himself in much earlier on. I don't get me wrong, I feel sorry for the guy, you know, he's been through a lot of stuff, but you know, he is still a serial murderer. And, you know, if you're aware of the fact that all it would take is someone to put you in a room, whisper a few words to you, and you'll go into psycho-killing mode, I would probably hand myself in. And the way they're portraying him, I'm kind of surprised he didn't put a bullet in his own head. I'm sorry, he was a clearly depressed person who was very sort of sorry for what he'd done, but he was still kind of clinging to life, and I just thought a little bit, I don't know, the way they're portraying him, it would have made more sense for him to kind of hand himself in and say, look, I'm this... please lock me up because some crazy scientist did something crazy to me and it's regrettable and stuff. I'm really sorry for him. But
maybe you know, but I also think when portraying a character as a survivor for that long, I do think it makes sense that their first instinct would be to keep going.
This is true. Yeah, I'm being a little bit unfair on Bucky. I guess I mostly side with Tony on this, and I get very frustrated with a lot of the Avengers movies because the way that they do the storyline is they always go, now we've got Tony Stark, right? And in the previous movie, he grew as a human being. And now we're going to make everything his fault again. And I just think, oh, really? And so he never gets to progress to be any more. The way they filmed Civil War is they film him in a light, in a villainous light. Even his own teammates are barely his teammates. Natasha's there like, nah, you know,
By the end of Civil War, it's pretty clear that spiritually, at least, Cap won, because Tony's just got Vision staring at a chess set and War Machine telling him he was right. And I'm like, but War Machine's, all War Machine's done in the last, like, 11 movies was tell you were wrong. So, okay. I didn't really see Tony as the villain in that movie. I actually thought there was, like, growth that was acknowledged, because we started the Marvel movies with Tony Stark as, like, the capitalist, you know, and the private individual, and we slowly watched him, like, repeatedly be shown that he is an individual and other individuals aren't enough, and that they fail, and that they're fallible, and that their mistakes kill thousands of people.
Yeah.
And we've seen this character slowly grow more and more obsessed with security and with keeping people safe no matter what, and we saw it through the unfortunate not very good Iron Man 3. Yeah.
He's become obsessed with accountability. And that's the thing is, yeah, I agree, you do get to see his growth, but only we get to acknowledge his growth. Like, none of the other characters. At one point, Natasha has a really odd sort of line, and she says, why does this have to be about your ego? And I was there like, literally nothing to do with his ego, in the least. He's the only one being responsible of the lot of you.
Well, he was attempting to be responsible. I think that kind of goes out the window in the third act of the film.
Then it becomes a bit of a revenge arc.
I'm glad, because...
Yeah, but if it hadn't become a revenge arc, that they just couldn't have kept the conflict up. It was the only way that they could keep... Because Tony was being so reasonable and moderate and trying to meet the middle ground, and everyone else is there like, no, we're going to do it my way. And the only way for it to not work out was to make it a revenge arc.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing about, you know, that amazing airport scene in the middle of the movie that everybody's heard of, and Spider-Man's there and Ant-Man does stuff, is that, as wonderful as that scene is, I'm not giving any spoilers, there's not actually any tension, because everyone's kind of being punching each other in an airport is a superhero's version of reasonable. Like we said, these are unrealistically bombastic characters. Their idea of a disagreement involves explosions, so there's not actually any tension in that scene. No one's trying to hurt or kill each other, they're just like trying to get to opposite ends of that one field and trying to move past each other.
It's like game of capture the flag where Bucky is the flag.
Yeah. Yeah. So like that scene, I'd say everyone is being their version of reasonable. Mm-hmm. I would say by the end it kind of tips, and I won't give spoilers, but it tips. And this is the thing that I think matters for me a lot in, if you're going to pit superheroes against each other, is you have to convince me that they're actually fighting. And not just, like, someone's taken two action figures and repeatedly smashed them against each other and said, yes, I did story. By the way, those are my thoughts on Batman versus Superman.
We'll come on to that in a moment.
Yeah.
By the way, guys, there's going to be spoilers in this episode.
Sorry.
Yes, sorry, everybody. Spoilers. Wash dies in the end of the Firefly movie.
What? Whoa! None of us were ready to be reminded of that, Ben. That was quite unnecessary.
I just broke my own heart. I don't know why. That was self-harm, I think. I feel terrible. I'm sorry, everyone. Yeah, no, but definitely spoilers. But so if we're going to go spoilers, then I think it's important, you know, when talking about Civil War, it goes from the Sokovia Accords and vaguely saying we need accountability to Bucky killing Iron Man's parents. In front of him on TV.
That was a little jump, I found. I haven't actually read Civil War, in fairness. But
Bucky's not even in the comic.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people had issue with the comic, because in the comic, it is very one-sided. In the comic, it is kind of like, it starts off as a debate, but then Cap is keeping the then Iron Man is keeping the unregistered superheroes in a prison in essentially hell, and he's hiring supervillains to help bring them in, and it's kind of like, okay, well, you're the bad guy now. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
And he's, like, cloning Thors. but that didn't work out. But, like, the movie does manage, it doesn't, I didn't think they tipped Tony into villain territory. We're following Cap's story because it's Cap's movie, but you don't have to think that he's right. Like, that whole time, I was thinking, I was like, objectively, you're both kind of wrong.
Yeah.
I thought, at least, you know, for Tony, you can't just shove everything into the accountability of a system and go, there, I solved it, everything's fine, because that's not totally how that works. But for Cap, you can't just... Problem, I think, with Cap's point of view is when he says the best hands are still our own in all of the trailers, is the thing is, his hands, maybe, because he's like this weird, perfect human being. The problem is he's assuming everyone else on the planet is Captain America, which is very optimistic, and it's sweet, but it's wrong. So neither of them are truly right. Like, you know, and also we've seen, as Tony's gone from the ultimate individualist to only thinking systems can save us, Cap's gone on the ultimate, the opposite journey. He started in a place so deeply embedded in the system that they painted his body as the symbol of the American flag and gave him a shield for it and said, go. But, you know, he started in World War II and was told not to do anything and then broke the rules and everything was fine. He comes into the first Avengers movie to find government that's lying to him and a government that's willing to nuke New York City with him in it. Then he jumps to Winter Soldier and it turns out that the government was, you know, Nazis. And then whatever
Age... Which is always awkward to discover.
Yeah, that's always uncomfortable. And then Age of Ultron doesn't develop his character at all. But except maybe you could argue that he leaves it with a slightly stronger assumption that Tony is wrong all the time. So, like, you know, you have seen this speech that Cap gives at the end of the movie about how he can only put his faith in individuals, and Tony can only put his faith in systems. You can totally see that each of them are right in their own way, of through their experiences, that's all that they can trust and understand. And I think that's important for this, because otherwise it is just a, you know, if the motivations don't make any sense, then it doesn't work. For Civil War, the only character whose motivations didn't make any sense were Hawkeye's. He just kind of showed up. And, although I actually kind of loved that his motivations was basically the Russo brothers saying, I don't like that Hawkeye was given a family. Because he's just like, yeah, no, I got bored, I've come back. I'm like, cool, okay. Everyone else had a genuine stake and like, it made sense. He was just there.
I liked seeing Hawkeye. That he's one of my favorite characters. There was a bit at the end where, you know, they're in the jail and Hawkeye is just, you know, laying into Tony like, yeah, why did you do this? And I'm like, Hawkeye, you broke the law. Why are you guys surprised? You're like, well, was this what happened? You guys literally broke the law. And so you were arrested. And they're just so surprised. Well, Hawkeye's kind of acting like, well, no, we should be above this. And I'm like, I wasn't sure.
Because haven't they been all of this time?
Yeah.
They've blown up cities and no one arrested them. No, they are used to being above the law. But I think it's also not him saying, you know, I broke the law. I can't believe I'm paying for it. So much as he's saying, I can't believe you've made this the law.
Yeah.
I think that's
reasonable. I think the thing also, with Stark and Captain America is the fact that they are victims of assuming that everybody else shares their own personal viewpoint. Everybody else is going to act the way that they would. They can't seem to encompass something where there's a broad range of the way people will act. For example, Natasha is quite happy to pay lip service to the whole thing and then do whatever she wants anyway.
And, well, she's actually, I would say, an argument for why Tony's right, because she will just do whatever she wants, and it's not always the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I
have very mixed feelings about Natasha. A lot of people didn't like the way she was portrayed in Age of Ultron, and there's certainly parts of it where
including me.
But a lot of people really like the way she was portrayed in The Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't. I've been actually getting steadily more annoyed with Natasha as the Avengers films have gone on. I find her to be difficult to pin, more than comfortably hypocritical. And I think she really annoyed me during Civil War because her motive, they just didn't feel right. And she's so quick to lecture other people.
She's 70-odd. In fairness.
Hmm? Well, this is a problem with being the secondary character in so many different movies.
Yeah.
Is that she's been the voice in someone's ear in too many different movies for her to have a consistent character.
Yeah, which is really
annoying. It's actually hard for me to remember that she was in Iron Man 2. This is why I actually think I'm one of the few people who don't want a Black Widow movie, because there's no consistency or sense to her character that could hold on. Like, it's not about the character, it's not about the actress, she does a great job, but like, there's nothing that would hold a 2-hour movie, and there's also, she's one of those characters where every time you learn something about them or their backstory, they're less interesting.
But then I wonder whether that's just because of the way that it's been done in the movie so far. If she was given a chance to, yeah, but at this,
I actually think that in the comics too. Every time I learn something, she's one of those characters where every time she does more than just allude to her backstory, I'm like, I don't care.
I watched the, I don't know if you've heard of the Avengers Assemble cartoon. I think it's adorable.
I've heard of it.
And I watch it, you know, just for the fun of it. And I like Natasha in that. And I like Natasha in Earth's Mightiest Heroes as well. And so I like the character. She's an interesting character. And I think before Civil War, I was all for a Black Widow movie. And now I'm just not interested. Because I don't like her. I don't like her as a character. I think as an actress, the actress is brilliant. Yeah. And she's working really well with what she's got. But I don't care about the character. In fact, she really annoys me because she just... Oh, anyway, the point is but, that...
By the way,
Civil
for, those,
War...
for those who... Sorry, yeah. Just quickly, for those who do like Black Widow and would like to see more of the character, shout out to Mark Waid and Chris Samnee, who are currently doing a run of Black Widow at Marvel Comics. Go and read it. They're great.
I would actually like to see a movie just to see what they could make of it, because she's criminally underused character in both the books and the films, and it would be really nice to see if they could take the character and make a convincing arc for her, because at the moment she seems to be sort of stuck on Redemption Road, and she's not as morally grey as I feel like she should be.
Yeah.
You know, you get flashes of it, but most of the time it's like, no, I'm trying to be the voice of reason, but also the voice of survival, and...
Yeah, she goes between that. This is the odd thing. She's kind of between Tony and Cap, at which point you'd reckon she'd be a regular reasonable human being, because she's a lot more amoral than Cap is, because she's doing all this kind of grey stuff area. But then she gets really sort of uppity with Iron Man, like, no, you know, you can't be doing that. So she's kind of in the middle, and yet, despite being in the middle, she's not in the middle. She's just flittering between the two, and I don't know. Maybe
that's the explanation they gave in the movie. I can see an explanation for that is in she's more like on Tony's side, but she really doesn't like him. You know, if there's one thing that's been consistent between Iron Man 2 and Civil War is that she doesn't like Tony Stark.
No one likes Tony Stark.
Except Tony Stark.
Tony Stark doesn't like Tony Stark.
No, actually, that's a fair point. I like Tony Stark.
He's
a complete train wreck. He's a great character.
I am annoyed that so many of his films now are just Tony does soul searching and then tries to change something. I'm like, you need more than that, guys.
Yeah. I think the idea that, Tony does have a lot of growth. In each movie, he has a lot of growth, which means that there are more sides that you can develop of him without having to make it about Tony screws up because he's self-centered and stuff like that. Because actually, he's not really that much anymore. He keeps growing, you know, he keeps developing. And I just think the repetitive story arc for him over and over and over again is just so... exhausting, and it makes it. I just don't think they do Tony Stark justice in the more.
Well, I don't think he was. It was a vain story arc he was given in Civil War. You know, I think what he was doing. I actually like the third act of the movie when it suddenly does become personal is one of the few times where I'm like, no, this isn't keeping with everybody. Like, this makes sense to me. But I don't think he was pro the Sokovia Accords from a place of vanity. I think it was maybe from a place of guilt. Ultron was definitely his fault. That was slightly more out of character, I think. But I thought it made sense. I thought
the one time they did what? Sorry.
The one time they actually had Tony having a story arc about trying to be accountable was the one time that
was in Cap's movie.
It was in Cap's movie. But yeah, it's Tony's an interesting. character. I really loved the first Iron Man movie. I mean, you know, I've loved all of them, to be honest, and I like
Iron
him
Man 3,
as a character.
Surely.
You know,
I don't enjoy Iron Man.
I watched them and I was fine with them. I thought that they were funny, so and I like Robert Downey Jr. in the part, and I think he does it brilliantly.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he's a great character.
I actually thought he was a better job in Civil War than he did in the last Iron Man movie or the last Avengers movie, actually. Like, I think sometimes considering how easy it is for him to play that character, I think it's possible for him to phone it in and for none of us to notice. There seemed to be more depth and intensity in this round from everyone, I think, because they all actually seem to really like it.
That's also something to do with the writing and the direction and stuff like that as well. And
that's what I mean, though, is they all seem like Downey and the rest. They all seem to be like, you know, well, this one I'm not just contracted to do. This one seemed fun. Like,
yeah.
I don't think he's given a role that seems like he was acting this way since the first Iron Man movie.
Yeah.
You know, I like that. I thought he did a really good job. I thought they all did a really good job.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to divert us away from Marvel onto DC for the moment, so to talk about Dawn of Justice. And we can do a little comparison here of exactly how invested you get in Dawn of Justice and the fact that you've got two superheroes fighting each other and Civil War and the fact you've got the Avengers sort of splitting up and fighting amongst themselves.
Dawn of Justice is a case of two superheroes meeting for the first time and being pitted against each other.
That actually doesn't work because you have got two established superheroes. I mean, I know it's a different actor. You've got Ben Affleck playing Batman.
Rorschach. Oh, right, no, he's playing Batman, right. When he squints, because of, you know, all the people that he murders in that movie, sometimes I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a point there. We'll talk about Rorschach another time, because he is probably my absolute favourite comic book character of all time. But we'll move on from that, because...
Yes. For Dawn of Justice, well, it is that, you know, that first meeting, which is a little jarring, because we're so familiar with these characters. And which is also jarring, because they don't act like the characters that we're supposed to understand. You know, I know a lot of people liked Ben Affleck as Batman. I didn't. I still say the best on-screen Bruce Wayne was Michael Keaton. And, you know, Christian Bale was the best person in the Batsuit.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
Yeah, I don't think the See, as much as I was raving about Cap and Iron Man's motivations for Civil War, I don't think the motivations in Dawn of Justice made any sense.
No, they didn't. It was just kind of, oh, there's another alpha over there in that mysteriously similar city. It was like a tale of two cities, but with Batman and Superman.
Which, by the way, is Gotham like 20-minute drive from Metropolis? Because there's a shot where you see Gotham from Metropolis, and I'm like, wait, it's right there?
Yeah, what? Basically, it's just right across the bridge.
His last two movies, it's not even across the bridge. Is it just like the next block? I don't understand.
It's like, but apparently, you know, Superman couldn't have ever gone to Gotham to help out there. So.
No.
Well, I mean, Gotham Superman doesn't help anyone in these.
Yeah, he's just a sort of.
Star. He just kind of glowers.
I don't find angsty Superman. Angsty Superman's a bit more interesting than sort of I'm all American, and it's the reason I don't like Captain America is the fact that they're too perfect to be relatable a lot of the time, unless they go evil.
I don't know. I think the problem is that we've jumped into angsty Superman who we're doubting before going through the Superman we can actually trust.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
In these two movies, the problem with wanting to deconstruct characters is first you have to construct them. And they've been so eager to get into, like, The Dark Knight Returns, which is, the famous Frank Miller, like, deconstruction of Batman, and, like, the death of Superman, and what if Superman is evil, and what if we can't trust him. They forgot to ever give us a point where we can. Like, we've never seen Superman as a hero. We've seen him break character to kill Zod in Man of Steel, which I understand a lot of people like Man of Steel and a lot of people don't. I thought it was fine until the last 30 minutes when it went just, I think, totally overboard. I think it's, even though I don't like it, I think it's a better movie than Batman vs. Superman, because at least I wasn't bored. I didn't like that. Sorry, Zack Snyder, but I don't like you or your movies.
He crammed too much in. He crammed too many. He tried to cram in far too many storylines in that film. I now, actually quite enjoyed, I saw it twice, and I actually quite enjoyed it the second time round, because it wasn't like a massive, like, sensory shock.
Yeah, no, it's a little bit, it tried to tone it down a little bit from the end of Man of Steel. The problem is, when Batman and Superman actually fight, what I remember doing is I looked down, and then I nudged my friend who I was there to see it with, and went, hey, my watch doesn't light up, can you tell me what time it is and how much of the movie is left? I was bored. And that made them laugh, and I guess that made it all worth it, because laughter is wonderful. But no, I was bored in Batman vs. Superman. There's when you squint, there's such a hint of, like, toxic masculinity to the way Zack Snyder thinks these characters are supposed to behave.
Yeah, it seems that having two alpha males was just enough to justify the entire film.
Yeah,
that's what their entire conflict is, though. It's alpha male, and then of course they basically they challenge that by adding a female superhero
who was the best part of that movie, even though her inclusion made absolutely no sense.
Absolutely.
Like, at least Black Panther in Civil War played a role. Wonder Woman was like, "Well, I read my email and then I showed up to fight a monster." Like, what?
I mean,
I'm glad she had cool email, but I don't know. And there was like 20 minutes of dream sequence in this movie,
which was just weird and random and disconnected from everything else. Which I think
The future? I like.
Isn't it something to do with the Flash going back in the future and in an alternate reality where Superman does lose Lois Lane and goes a bit nuts?
And again, the problem is there, we haven't seen this version of Superman be Superman. There's a point in this movie where Lex Luthor, who I'll get to, like, creates, you know, the Doomsday Monster that's supposed to kill Superman in the comics, and the first thing it does is leap up at its creator and try and kill Luthor, and Superman stops it. Like, he catches the giant fist and throws it out of the building. And that's the only time, like, you know, because in the comics, or all versions of this character we understand, we're like, yeah, no, Superman doesn't let anyone get hurt. That makes sense. It actually felt out of character for me to see him save Lex in that scene. So the fact that the one time that he was, like, supposed to be unflinchingly heroic, I went, doesn't make any sense for him to do that in this version, in the version of him that I've been shown. Like, we haven't seen Superman be the Superman. He had 42 lines in this movie with his name on the title.
Yeah.
Seriously, the internet counted. And most of the lines were, like, ending ellipses, like, not full sentences. Just shouting things like, there's no time, and you don't understand. And I'm like, if there's no time and you don't understand, there's a scene in this movie where they start fighting, where instead of saying, I'm being forced to fight you, or Lex Luthor is gonna kill my mom, he runs up to Batman and says, you don't understand. Batman says, I understand. And then Superman throws him through a building. I'm like, how is that gonna make him understand? Like, what? Why? Like, really? They just go up, they get just close enough where I thought maybe they'd finally kiss, and then Superman just pushes him away. By the way, that's the other version of this movie that would have been way, way better.
And it could have been, actually. It's the whole motivation with Lex Luthor as well. Like, what was that about? I actually thought, as a character, that was an interesting way to go, but it doesn't scan with my headcanon.
But I felt so bad for Jesse Eisenberg. Because you could tell that he was being told to do things. Like, Jesse Eisenberg is an actor where this won't, I don't think it'll affect him, how much people hated this role, because all the reactions seem to be, Jesse Eisenberg is a good actor, so who was telling him to do this? Like, he was being told to do this weird Riddler impression, and...
Yeah, because Lex Luthor is not a foam-at-the-mouth sort of villain, in general.
Yeah, and when he, you know, making him a foam-at-the-mouth sort of villain means... that when you're like, oh, he's so smart, I'm like, no, he's not, he's a nut. like, oh, he's thought of everything, I'm like, no, he didn't, he hasn't even showered. You know, it's that kind of ruins him.
Why was he setting up this big thing? Because really what it came down to was, I want to see two superheroes fight, which seems to be every little boy, and quite often every little girl's dream, apparently.
Yeah, I guess.
Just some
and
random
even there,
random.
It doesn't make sense, because he, even in the justification of, oh, well, you know, Superman has caused too much destruction and he's got to go, which they all kind of flirted with at the beginning, he's then like, I'm also going to make Doom, you know, Lex is like, oh, the Kryptonians are dangerous and we need to get rid of them, I'm now going to make an even bigger Kryptonian and just let it loose and everything will be fine. Yes, this is what I'm, like, that doesn't make any sense. That was my problem with Dawn of Justice, is nothing anybody did made any sense. It just happened because they wanted to get a certain shot or a certain frame. Like,
yeah.
I'll give it to Zack Snyder. He's a great cinematographer, but he's not... There was no story to... Like I said, you know, when Batman and Superman walk up nose to nose, I'm like, that's a great shot. We've been waiting 75 years for it, but there's no reason for it to be happening. Yeah. Also, just, it was so easy for me to write another version of this movie, because Batman has lines like, it's time you learn what it means to be a man. And there's so many different ways for me to take that.
Okay, so fanfiction.net then?
Sorry, everybody. You all go and... I'm not going to do this. You go and do it for me. No, but that was the problem. Like, it was hyper-masculinity to the point of self-parody. Like, when they're, like, screaming and flexing and running at each other, it's not intimidating or cool. It's just like, good for you. I'm going to sit here in the corner. Well, and then...
It's the idea that explosions and conflict will sell. And... Yeah, and they do, except that at this point in time, we don't just want sort of physical conflict. There needs to be an emotional conflict, and for that, there does need to be motivations. Now, as much as I didn't like Civil War, because I don't like to see that team break up and fight each other, all of them, you know, Cap and Tony had clear motivations for what they were doing.
That did actually...
Yeah, and even if you're shouting at the screen, no, I think you're wrong, at least there's a standpoint, there's a viewpoint.
Yeah, like both
of
them.
From, with, that's good.
Yeah, from both of their points of view, though. Like, if you looked at it from their point of view, you could understand why they were thinking what they were thinking. It made total sense. Whereas the reason, you know, I've seen scenes of it, but the reason I didn't watch Batman vs. Superman was simply because I could see no genuine character motivations for what they were doing at all. It seemed to me entirely to be. Its selling point was the fact that you had these two well-known characters who, as you've said, Ben, we didn't actually ever get to see be themselves. They were just these depraved kind of shadow versions of themselves, which had been changed for the, you know, in order to be gritty. And that was meant to be the selling point, that, yeah, these two people you know are going to be fighting each other and there's going to be cool explosions. And that's just not enough in this day and age.
To be fair, there are entire stories dedicated to who would win in a fight, Batman or Superman, and people still are fascinated by it. Well, yeah, it's a done argument, but the result is, if Batman's got time to plan, then probably Batman, but if not, then Superman.
Well, here's, and I'm going to throw into the comics again, because, you know, I'm a purist and a snob, I guess. there's a run of Batman which just finished by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, which is, I think, the best thing that's come from DC in years, and it's amazing, and I'll miss them. They do at least one issue where Batman and Superman go at it for a minute, and I think he solved that conflict personally, perfectly, is in Batman's, you know, inner monologue. He admitted, he's like, everyone always wants to know who would win in a fight between Batman versus Superman. Well, the answer is, we both lose because we're fighting. Like, and that's, I think, the best, the only, you know, there shouldn't be one of them who wins. It doesn't make any sense for one of... I've never thought, you know, for me, and the route that this movie did go with, oh, Batman will plan and have kryptonite. I'm like, well, that's boring. But the alternative is Superman kills him. And I'm like, that's also boring. they, more than anyone else, shouldn't be a physical conflict, because there is no version of them fighting in a physical conflict where it doesn't end up being one-sided to the point of... they didn't actually have a fight scene. And they had a 7-long-minute scene on a rooftop where Batman hit at Superman for a bit and then stopped, and then Superman hit at Batman for a bit and then stopped, and then Batman hit at Superman for a bit. Like, it wasn't a fight. There was no choreography or movement. It was just one of them would do a thing and win, and then the other one would do a thing and win. That's
and then boring. They discovered their mothers have the same name.
Yes. And then ended it. Solves everything.
Oh, well, that's the answer then.
The interesting thing going back to Civil War is the fact that actually no one really wins except the guy who is the villain, who is ordinary and human and doesn't have any of the superpowers, because what he sets out to do, he actually accomplishes, and that is causing this big rent in the fabric of the Avengers.
Yeah, no, props to Zemo. You were the most successful one-note Marvel villain I think we've ever seen. Yeah, and even as one note as that, yeah, no purple mask adhesively stuck to his face. and even as one note as that character was, everything he did made more sense than Lex Luthor. I understood perfectly what Zemo was trying to do, and I understood why it worked.
Lex Luthor is a lot of ranting about the painting of, you know, Milton's casting out of the Rebel Angels. And then something about God and how God and the Father, they can't all be good or they can't all be right, and somehow that connected to Superman.
Well, because they tried, you know what, there is one of the other problems, I think, with connecting so deeply, you know, kind of monotheistic mythology and Superman is that, yes, other characters can compare Superman to Jesus. Other characters can compare Superman to a god. But Superman shouldn't ever know about it. That was the thing. The worst part of Man of Steel for me is when the ghost of his father is like, go and lead them into the light. And Superman does a Jesus pose and flies off. Because I'm like, no, he's never supposed to know about this.
Well, there's that. And there's the Day of the Dead when he's sort of flying down and everyone's reaching out. And I'm like, I found that deeply disquieting to watch.
So did I. Other characters might do it, but Superman should think of himself as this kid from Kansas.
Yeah.
Like, because when he actually thinks of himself as a kind of god figure, which he seems to do in these movies, I don't know, he doesn't say enough to make me think otherwise, is he stops being Superman and he starts just being a butt wearing a cape. I have no interest in watching that.
On that note, moving back to Marvel again, to X-Men Apocalypse, which is
butts in a cape.
This is something, it's slightly different because you did have a main villain, but the main villain was sidelined, I felt, by the actual conflict between the X-Men. And once again, you have the classic Magneto, Xavier, are they friends, are they enemies?
They're frenemies.
Frenemies.
I mean, the thing there is, I had a lot of trouble with some parts. I actually liked a lot of Apocalypse because I love the X-Men.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little confusing to say in this, like, very Avengers-satirized world. But I think the X-Men are more interesting. I think they're a more interesting conflict. I think they have more interesting characters.
Yeah.
So it's confusing to me that this was the first time amongst all these other movies trying to get into, like, an ideological spat, that X-Men finally went the world is ending and we've got to stop it route, because they've never done that before.
Yeah.
Well,
the X-Men have done ideological problems for years and years, and now they finally switch track to Blue Man is going to destroy the world. Like, no, not Blue Man. I mean, at least he's Oscar Isaac, so that's nice, because I get to look at Oscar Isaac. Even under all that makeup, he's beautiful. But, you know. I don't know, I liked parts of Apocalypse more than I liked other parts of Apocalypse. Spoilers going in, I'm now going to spoil Magneto's storyline. I'm so sorry for everyone, but he's given a wife and child at the beginning of the movie, and he's, like, living a normal human life, which matches up with some versions of the comics. Yeah, Magneto has had families, and that's totally cool, and it's okay. They almost instantly fridge these two characters without any development, which means killing a female character just to motivate a male character. And they use that as a justification for why Magneto would then agree to destroy the planet.
Yeah.
And I don't... And Magneto, I actually, you know...
He's much more... He's not about, let's destroy the planet. He's more about, sort of, well, mutants should be on top. But he'd been trying the whole, sort of, I'm going to act like I'm normal. I'm going to try Charles's version, but I'm not going to do it with Charles because I find him a bit preachy, kind of thing.
And the other thing is, okay, this is a kid who suffered under a regime of people who were literally trying to, you know... you know, yeah, like, he suffered under a Nazi regime.
And... If he was going to want to destroy the world, that would probably be it. And, you know, the best scene with him in the movie is when Apocalypse, like, teleports him to, I think, the wreckage of a concentration camp, and Magneto destroys it, and they cut it between a scene of him screaming as a kid in first class, and then the adult. And I was like, that's actually the best part of his character in the movie, is that one scene, I thought. Yeah. That made sense. Because I was like, yeah, no, you're in pain, dude. Everything that's ever happened to you sucks. Like, more than I think any other character in comic books. This is a Holocaust survivor who's repeatedly been abused and fought and, you know, driven to the point of extreme. And I liked that, but I couldn't then continuously get behind the Apocalypse asked Magneto to destroy the world and he did it. Like, that, I don't know. Yeah. I also wasn't so thrilled with Jennifer Lawrence's Mystique in the movie, and it has nothing to do... I think there are some people who unfairly dislike her, and my dislike here had nothing to do with the actress, or the character itself being so big a part of the movie, and everything to do with the fact that the First Class, and to an extent, Days of Future Past for this character were all about accepting who you are and being proud of that and being okay with it and surviving in the world, accepting, you know, basically coming out of the closet. And then she spent this whole movie disguised as a human.
Yeah.
Like, and being like, you know, that's not what we need. And I'm like, yeah, it is. And this isn't a realization you can come to now, because you had it two movies ago. And that was kind of my problem with a lot of Apocalypse ends with, we're going to finally form the X-Men. It's like, didn't you do that in that movie in 2011?
Like, but there's no continuity between any of the X-Men movies. I mean, I think they kind of really... continuity.
I think. If you read X-Men comics with all the time travel and alternate dimensions and
Jean Grey is dying,
this is so on point with the way X-Men actually are. It's shocking to me that a version of, like... that there are only two timelines. That's the only thing that doesn't improve. Look, in the comics, Cyclops has a kid named Cable who's older than him and has a metal arm. Like, X-Men comics are insane. So I've always been thrilled that instead of just rebooting, they were like, time travel insanity. And I was like, thank you. I'm good with that.
But I mean, that's what they had to do that, because they were literally like, well, we've kind of killed half of the X-Men at this point, so time travel and bring them back.
Yeah, basically. You know, and there was a moment in Apocalypse where some of the younger characters walk out of Return of the Jedi and then say, I guess we can all agree that the third one is always the worst. And I just lost it. I was like, that is the funniest, you know. And I will actually give this X-Men movie some credit for being slightly better as an ensemble. And that's true, you know, especially in comparison to Civil War, which is an Avengers movie that was really a Captain America movie, that was really an Iron Man movie, that was really an Avengers movie, is finally we got an X-Men movie where there was more than two X-Men. Like, I liked Nightcrawler and Cyclops and Jean Grey and, you know, and Beast. And, like, I liked that I was like, more than one of these characters has spoken aloud. That's great. Maybe I'm biased, because I unfairly like Scott Summers. Not as a kid. He's a terrible person, objectively. But in 50 years of Marvel comic books, he's the most developed of any comic book character, I think, in the most ridiculous way. So I kind of enjoyed seeing him not being played as, like, a two-bit straw man. I was like, that's nice. Good job, guys. Yeah, no, they gave their characters some nuance, and I liked that.
But going on to sort of the actual dynamic, because, yeah, you know, the X-Men, more even than the Avengers, have got this really sort of team kind of feel, because their entire story is that they're banded together because everyone else is hunting them, basically, you know. Yeah, they've come together, and then it's between these two extremists. You know, you've got Magneto and then you've got Charles, and it's which side are you going to go on to? But, you know, at this point, Magneto is not the leader of the opposite side. So it's it's either join the Apocalypse or... so.
Yeah, no, there wasn't much debate in me here. It was, man, should we be the X-Men or should we destroy the world? I'm like, well...
So what was the motivation of the four horsemen then?
Magneto's motivation was that he's sad now.
Good.
Angel's motivation was that he's
the same character, like, he played the same role in the comics, except he was blue. And I guess they wanted him to be in the movie. Psylocke's motivation was that they wanted to promote her character a lot in the coming soons, even though she wasn't a character. And who was the fourth horseman?
I can't remember.
There were four of them, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true. This is how weak these characters were. It was Magneto, or I guess Archangel, Psylocke, and Storm.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Although, that was really strange, but that was more sort of like, well, nobody else has ever looked out for me, and I'm an Egyptian street kid kind of thing.
Yeah, and she had really early. She had some excellent development right in the beginning, and, you know, the apocalypse tricks her, we're going to save the world. But, like, the moment his actions don't reflect his words, you think she'd be like, you might be lying.
Wouldn't be nothing better.
Yeah, like, I mean, Psylocke and Angel, I guess you could say they were seduced by the fact that Apocalypse gave them power.
Yeah.
That would be fair.
Magneto just wants to commit mass suicide.
Yeah, Magneto just wants to brood. Psylocke and Angel are like, oh cool, I'm strong now. Which, as little characters they were given, I'll at least be like, okay, that's fine. And Storm wanted to be a member of the X-Men, but without immediately being a member of the X-Men. But at least she had a mohawk, so that's good.
Yeah.
Because I very much approve of Mohawk Storm. I always have. I'm like, good for you, Aurora. I address the X-Men by their first names when I slip up, because I think I know them.
So does it hurt, then, for you, who's very, very familiar with these characters, how did you feel about seeing them fighting on the opposite sides?
Almost nothing.
That's not good.
Well, because, I don't know, just because the versions of the people on the opposite sides, like of Psylocke and Archangel and Storm. Storm, I was at least relieved when she changed sides. Like I said, I was just kind of annoyed with her lack of critical thinking throughout the movie. But for the most part, people who were put in the villainous roles were so unrecognizable from the versions of them that I like and understand that I didn't care. Angel didn't die in that movie. A dude with wings died in that movie whose name could have been Warren. We don't know because he's never addressed by name. Psylocke wasn't in that movie. Olivia Munn was, with a glowing fist, and she almost stabbed Beast in the foot, and that made him really mad. Beast is another person who I've had a lot of problems with in these versions of the movies, just because I don't like the message it sends of him constantly changing back to human.
Yeah.
I really don't. You know, and I liked the metaphor for the end of First Class of, you know, in the X-Men, they've always represented, like, civil rights and the LGBTQ, and basically whoever was being persecuted at the time, which is great because it means that didn't come out right. It's not great because someone's always being persecuted. It means it's great because we can always use them as a standpoint to talk about this stuff. So I really don't like that Beast isn't blue for most of these movies because it's like, okay, so do hide yourself because you can't live as who you are. Instead, take a pill and don't. Okay.
Yeah, because considering that he had that whole.
Uncomfortable with that last two movies, like I was uncomfortable with the fact that in Days of Future Past, I'm not going to walk.
Yeah, and you know, it's the same. Yeah, the same with Mystique. That they keep every movie, they keep coming to the conclusion of being proud of themselves and proud of who they are. And then it goes back to they go back to square one again. And I do understand that this is a process, you know, of accepting yourself if you are different. To the social norm, it is a process. You don't ever it doesn't just click and that's it for the rest of forever. You know, it is a process. But I agree that it's disappointing that they can't represent. Even if you're representing the struggle of sort of coming to terms with it over time, it is a shame. Yeah, that Beast does keep reverting back to human again, as if
And I think that kind of touches on the problem that I've actually really, I loved Days of Future Past. I liked Apocalypse slightly less, but, you know, I enjoyed it. It wasn't my favorite movie of the season. Is that the problem is that all of the characters were fully developed after First Class, when you think about it. Yeah. We leave First Class in 2011, Magneto is Magneto, and he's got the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, and Xavier is in a wheelchair, and he's going to go form the X-Men, and they understand their ideological standpoints, and Beast is blue, and Mystique knows that she should be blue. And then we get to Days of Future Past and Apocalypse, and they've all gone weirdly backwards and had to solve these same personal crises that they'd already come to the end of. You know, and like, the last shot of Apocalypse is the X-Men all in the X-Men uniforms. And I'll admit, finally seeing real, like, comic-like X-Men uniforms, a little bit of pee came out of me. But it was at the end of the third movie that they'd made with these versions of the characters. I'm like, that's not, you know, like, it would be like if at the end of a third Spider-Man movie, he invents his web shooters. I'd be like, you know, and go, what are you going to call yourself? And I'd be like, oh, okay, it's been 6 years. Each movie has been titled The X-Men. It's not like the last two were titled X-Guys.
it's like with the series Smallville from a few years ago, where it's like, still by the end, he's still not flying, and that's what I was doing. I was thinking, for God's sake, by now he would have discovered he could fly.
You think he'd be, like, for the first three seasons of a show like that, starting when he's, like, 15? Yeah, okay, but you think by the time Clark Kent is, like, 25, he'd Superman by then. Like,
yeah.
You know, Superman anyway, is an hour.
We've actually talked about this for an hour now, guys, and it's great. We can carry on, but...
yeah. I think we mostly just talked about superheroes.
Well, that makes sense. That was at least we were supposed to this time.
Yeah.
And we didn't even get to Daredevil fighting the Punisher, guys.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, though...
We'll save that for the actual Daredevil episode.
Yeah, we'll have a Daredevil episode dedicated to just Daredevil. To review... There are times where superhero versus superhero works. There are times where superhero versus superhero hasn't worked.
And there are times when it kind of works. Or in other words, Ben liked Civil War. Ben kind of liked Apocalypse. Ben really didn't like Batman versus Superman.
Ben is our resident expert here at Dissecting Dragons.
And speaking in the third person, he was so uncomfortable with it.
Anyway, all right then. Well, thanks for coming onto the show again, Ben. It's been great to have you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for having me.
And listen out. Remember that we have our guest spot for 1,000 downloads, and we will be revealing the winner of that soon, along with the topic. So look out for that. And thanks very much for listening.
Thanks. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.